B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Get back to your calls. We will be getting to some Patriots thoughts, updated Patriots thoughts today. Some thoughts on the Bruins game last night, which I found interesting, but our main topic is the Benintendi trade. Just real quick, Big Jim Murray on the update there. If you watch on the simulcast, you didn't hear it. Did you say Robert Williams is out tonight for the Celtics?
He is, yep. Left hip soreness, so it begins again.
Maz, I think he did make it to 10 straight games.
Yeah, so I was just going to check that, because then, here you go.
He did. He made it to 10. You know, the game in Utah was his 10th consecutive game, career high. Career high. So golf clap for the Time Lord. He actually made it 10 straight NBA games, but that was obviously too much because now he's back out. F out of here with Robert Williams. F out of here. All of you. Scal, I don't want to hear about him anymore. I don't want to hear anyone talk about Robert Williams. He can't post. He can't show up. Okay? He just got to 10 games in a row, and that was the most he'd ever played in his career, and it was too much. So please. Do Time Lord on your own time, okay? Back to your phones. Mike in Jamaica Plain. I just froze up here. Jimmy, if you could, please, line six. Mike, go ahead, please.
Maz, that was the best opening monologue ever. You need to do 12 minutes at the beginning of every show for every day of preseason because you're right. The dark ages of Sox, people don't – I'm 50 years old. People don't – they don't remember it. And nobody knows a dilapidated Fens – like a poor Sox team, and it's coming, and I don't like what Bloom's doing at all, and I haven't for a long time. I've yet to actually hear him say anything that I like, to be honest with you. Thanks.
Oh, he's not really speaking, Mike. It's the voice activation thing like we have with Carmine. It's the... It's the computer program that spits out in the voice of a Yale, of another 30-something white Yale grad with a square chin and talking about, zone rating. He doesn't really have a voice. It's a computer program. So that's why you don't remember him saying anything.
I got nothing against Bloom personally. Okay, I don't even know the guy. Okay. I'm just telling you that philosophically, he represents to me everything that the game has now become. And I can't take it anymore. I just cannot take it anymore. They've got to turn every freaking guy into the same player. I don't, it's fascist. the whole thing is fascist. It is. No, it's like fascism has overrun baseball, for crying out loud. Everybody's got to do it one way.
We're fighting the power here on Felger and Maz. Matt in the car. Go ahead, Matt.
Guys, to me, it feels like they're bailing on Benintendi to get out of any blame similar to what they did with Daniel Bard. You know, tweaking with the young guy, trying to get him to do something he's not used to doing, and then just completely messing up his career. So if I get a message for that cheap, stiff John Henry and his little puppet computer, Heim Bloom, it's F you, all right? F you and F your team, because I'm tired of it.
Okay. So I'd say the response to the trade has not been overwhelmingly positive. Yes, Maz.
So look, there are some guys you look at and say, there's more in there. There's more. Xander Bogaerts is a prime example. Okay, Xander Bogaerts was a big guy who hit like a little guy. And they said, no, you're going to change the way you play. You're capable of more. You can drive the ball out to the opposite field. You need to do more of this. Fine. Yes. Absolutely, I'm for that. I'm not sitting here telling you that they're wrong about everything. But why are you effing with Andrew Benintendi? Again, why is it that every guy who's like a middle infielder all of a sudden has to start jacking the ball?
So effing with him and then giving up on him when he's still a young player with upside. Brian and Drake, explain that if you can. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm baffled when I listen to this because when did Boston turn into this city that we're the team now that we used to use to fleece them to get championship players? Do you remember? And this is all sports. These nerds, these stat guys, all you ever hear is this guy could be player X when Boston used to go out and just get player X. I mean, remember when the stat guys, they loved Al Jefferson and Ryan Gomes over Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen? What did you do? You brought those guys in. You won a championship. It's like in this day and age, potential is now valued over production. It used to be the bottom feeder teams that would look for potential, and they stunk because they didn't get anybody to produce. And now we're cheaping out, man. I don't understand it.
So once again, Brian, I don't think Franchi Cordero was the goal. I don't care what Heim Bloom said last night or how they spin it. They were dead set on dumping Andrew Benintendi, and this was the best they could do. And so whatever came back, they were going to try and sell as we like this because of this, that, and the other. But the truth is they were – because it's been out for months that Andrew Benintendi was on the block. So they were shopping him. They were dumping him. And whatever they got back is whatever they got back. And they just ended up with Franchi Cordero. Okay? So, to me, it's not about the return. It's not about trading for someone with potential. It's about dumping Andrew Benintendi, giving up on a guy that they screwed with. And now, even though he's just 25, they think has nothing to give, has no future, which is just baffling to me.
Yeah, something happened there. Again, my theory is that they started messing with him. Because he was picturesque in the batter's box. And all I ever said about him from the beginning, Mike, and again, vouch for me in this, and if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. All I said was, I don't know if he's going to hit for power consistently. He's not big enough.
Yep, and you resented the – he was a pink hat guy where, you know, good-looking kid, flowing locks, you know, looked good out there, made a few flashy catches, real smooth swing, and people were like, wee, Andrew Benintendi. And so I think you railed against that. But
yeah, fair enough. And yeah. In the world of talk radio, when you say he's not going to hit for enough power, that becomes he sucks. And everyone says, you think Benintendi sucks? No, I never said that.
You said overrated.
I did say overrated.
Because, again, he was a fan favorite because he had a certain flair to him. And it was a high draft pick. Okay, so he was overrated. And we ripped him for being overrated. Absolutely. I'd like him still to be here to either shut us up and prove us wrong or for us to say, we were right. He's overrated. But what's the point of trading him now if there's no premium on his return?
I don't know. I don't know. And this is the part of it that, again, that in a lot of ways I find mystifying. So now you're giving the guy away, and people say, well, I thought you said he sucked. No, I never said he sucked. He was an everyday player in the big leagues, and there is inherent value in that because, frankly, there aren't a lot of those. And a place like Boston, they should really have 7 to 9 of them in their lineup. They should have 7 to 9 everyday players in their lineup. I remember Theo Epstein saying when he was the GM, their goal was to be above average, no worse than average at any position, but above average at most of them. Okay, and Andrew Benintendi might have been average, but he wasn't below. And he might have been a tick above. Okay, might have been a tick above. So, again, not my idea of a superstar, but I was okay with Benintendi. And if you wanted to trade him, that's okay too, but get something for him.
Tony and Stoneham, your thoughts.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Before I agree with you guys, and Maz, you're 1,000% right. Before I get into that, can I tell you a couple of quotes from Arians that you guys have missed?
No, we're not doing that right this second, Tony.
All right, well, the thing is, no freaking team in baseball has 8 batters that are hitting 25, 30 home runs. They don't understand this freaking team. All right, you need a guy like Benintendi. And I'll tell you right now, we went 49 years before we got in the World Series again back in the 1900s. We're going to go another freaking 49 years the way they're running this team now. So get used to it.
God help us, Tony. I mean, again, Andrew Benintendi, just 3-4 years ago, 2018, 2017, those 2 years, his first 2 full years in Major League Baseball, 17 and 18, hit 271 and 290, scored 84 and 103 runs, hit 20 and 16 home runs in those 2 years consecutively, drove in 90 and 87. You put him at the top of your order, he can run a little bit, he scores runs. Again, he didn't have the nuances of the base running because he ran stupidly, but he had wheels. And so you could teach him to run. What is wrong with that ball player?
Nothing.
Maybe maybe you would say that, well, I don't want to draft that guy 7th overall. If I'm going to draft someone 7 overall, I want a 3,100 guy. And so you'd say, okay, you didn't get max value for the pick. He's a little overrated, or you didn't really maximize that draft position. You could say all those things and they would be fair. But what's wrong with that kind of ball player?
Nothing. Nothing. Again, but again, so now you got to squeeze more out of him. You got to turn him into something he's not. And in the process, F the whole thing up. I am almost blind with rage today over this thing. The more I think about it, the more I get agitated, the angrier I get, and it's on multiple levels because I don't like the direction of the franchise. Just look at the guys they've added this offseason. Hunter Renfro, platoon player. Kiki Hernandez, super utility platoon player. Garrett Richards, right-handed pitcher who's got a great slider that can get righties out, can't get lefties out, has been injured his entire career. I don't know what he is, starter or reliever. The Padres didn't want him, and they're good. Matt Andrews, good spin rate.
They re-signed Martin Perez, Mez.
I mean, it's all this fine-tune. Let me find one detail, one thing the guy can do well. He sucks overall, but let me find one thing he can do well, because then I can piece it together and we can go 82-80. For what? Dan, for what?
Dan in Boston, go ahead, please.
So, guys, like, you mentioned Paul Molitor and you mentioned Dustin Pedroia. So, Tony Gwynn and Joe Mauer and Derek Jeter would not have a place in the major leagues, or they would have been screwed with to go ahead. You have this asinine unbelievableness to go and screw with these players. What about Trot Nixon? Trot Nixon's a guy who I'd buy a beer for in a second. If I see him out there, I'll gladly buy him a beer. He had one of the best all-time moments in Red Sox history, hitting that home run against Roger Clemens in that Pedro.
Hold on. I don't care about that home run. Does Trot Nixon have a place in today's game, and do you miss Trot Nixon?
Well, so look, Trot Nixon to me was one of those guys that I would say actually benefited from hitting from a little more power. And again, steroid era, so factor that in.
But let me just, I'm sorry, can I answer it? So Trot Nixon was overrated. Trot Nixon was a disappointment. He was a high draft pick too, right?
He was, number seven, yeah.
So it's like, he didn't turn out to what we wanted him to be. A little disappointing for the seventh overall pick. And you could say at times he was overrated because of that one home run or whatever. He was a decent, good major league ball player.
Yes, right. And worth having on a team in the right role. Right, really is what it comes down to. Worth having on a team, perfectly fine. You don't need everybody to go up there and be Manny Ramirez.
I mean, again,
can we build an effing team?
Yes, Manny Ramirez. They want Joey Gallo. Again, when the NL Talent Evaluator and Alex Spears column says, I really love Franchi, I'd rather have him than Ben Attendee. He's not that far off from a Joey Gallo skill set. Like, Joey Gallo is this model. And I know most of you have never heard of Joey Gallo. Let me tell you who he is. He strikes out 200 times a year and has hit 40 home runs twice and has a 209 batting average in those years. So a guy and walks a ton. So Joey Gallo is a stiff who bores you, who goes up to the plate and nothing happens. He either walks, strike out, or every once in a while the ball goes out of the park. But that's it.
Mike, every time you bring up this name, I'm like, Joey Votto, right? No, he's good. I mean, I'm like, no.
Gallo.
I don't know who that
Gallo.
Is.
Gallo. And these freaking nerds, these clones that run the game, look at a player and say, ooh, he could turn into this guy. The guy that hits 209 and strikes out 200 times a year. The clones and their computers and the programs tell you that's the modern player and that's what they want. Now, that's enough to make you want to spit out your freaking cornflakes.
Totally. And look,
it's unwatchable on top of everything else.
Right, which is, again, and that's sort of the worst part of the whole thing for the average spectator. But on top of it, you're looking at that go, what? Like, so again, it's a small-minded, small-market way of doing it. Because when you're a small-market, small-minded team, you say, well, we can't get the guy that can hit righties and lefties, that can run and hit for average and power. We can't get that guy. We can't even get a three-tool player. So what we have to do is we got to go get the one tool. Or we got to identify the one thing in a player that people are overlooking and then amplify it. So somewhere along the line, they said, no, but if we teach that guy power, he'll have value. So tell him to launch. We're going to launch. That's what we're going to do, because then he'll have value. So they got to squeeze value out of something that really doesn't have it. And then they say, oh, look, we won 85 games. We're actually reasonably competitive, even though they never win the effing World Series. Never. Those teams never win. The A's don't win. The Twins don't win. The Rays don't win. None of them win.
Here's the deal, folks. Andrew Benintendi enrages Maz when he's here, and he enrages Maz when he's not here. He's just an individual that enrages Anthony Maserati. Go figure. Back with more of it right after this.
It's Felger and Maz. Buzz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mez.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Going every day.
Keeps her whack.
Keeps their whack.
Toucher and Rich. Mornings at 6. But now, more Felger and Mez on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The whole idea that, you know, I've never seen it before. What, in your year and a half? In your year and a half, you've never seen it before? And then secondly, big league hits don't grow on trees? Shut up. Seriously, put a sock in it already, would you? They don't. So is it about you getting the hit? Or is it about the no-hitter? Or who cares? You didn't win the game. Shut up. So, and the thing I find most offensive about him as a player is the base running. It really, his base running is wretched. It is awful. And for a guy that has, again, clearly has an understanding of how the game is played, he's got a nice swing. Like, you think there are instincts there with him. And then he runs the bases like that? I can only come to one conclusion when I look at his tools and his ability. The only conclusion I can come to is that he's got his head up his butt.
That was Maz on Andrew Benintendi a couple of years ago. What was that about? He said something about a no-hitter or someone bunting for a hit or what? What happened?
I think an umpire made a bad call that cost him a hit, might have cost them a run. And after the game, I have a vague recollection of this. He said, you know, it's the big leagues. Hits don't grow on trees. And so, look, again, you know, there were things about Benintendi I didn't like. And maybe he is one of these guys who was a selfish player, right, talking about his hits. And so maybe this was a point of contention, too. I look at the development of the player. When I say that, I use that term generally, okay? It went backwards. For a guy who was the seventh pick in the draft, who in his second full season in the big leagues had a pretty good year, he went backwards. Why? What? Again, I think it's because they tried to turn him into something he wasn't, and then there was some tension and friction there. It got hostile to the point where they said, we got to trade him, we got to give him away for nothing. Because to me, it feels like that's what happened here. Just the whole thing blows me away. And in all honesty, look, I'm trying... I'm going to have a nervous breakdown if I don't calm down. It's what's gone on in baseball and what is happening with the Red Sox right now to me is infuriating. They don't have an excuse for ripping it all down. They don't. They have plenty of money. They can rebuild the system and stay competitive on the fly. They can do both. There is no excuse for this.
And I'm
sorry, Mike, especially with a guy who's 26 and making $6 million. You want to say a year ago, and this was on the anniversary of the Mookie deal, if I'm not mistaken, right? Did I read that somewhere? Because I generally don't care about crap like that. Oh, 1 year to the day where they traded Mookie. Great. Who gives a rat's ass? What matters if it was 366 or 364 days? I don't care. But the Mookie deal, I felt like they're going to lose the guy. They're not going to pay the guy. He doesn't want to stay here. They had no choice. This one, $6.6 million. You give him away and you pay some of the money to get rid of him?
Because he had one bad year. And again, I think last year's a throwaway. It didn't look good last year, but the whole thing was a mess. He played 2 weeks. So he had one bad year? Like, Bogaerts had a bad year in the middle of his development. Devers had a bad year in the middle of his development. And then they both bounce back. Happens all the time for young players. Even if you're responsible for effing him up, why wouldn't you just see if he could pop his way out of it? Because there's a lot of potential there. And he's not costing you a lot. So why would you just not see that through? I mean, that to me is... And it would be one thing if you got a big return. Then you say, okay, we got to sell now because we're not going to get this kind of return. You're always going to get a guy like Franchy Cordero and players to be named later. You wouldn't have gotten that in 2 years for Andrew Benintendi. That's always going to be there, that kind of offer. So what's the deal on selling him now?
Great question.
I mean, seriously, Billy in Wilmington, your thoughts?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things on this trade. Like Felker, you were just saying, you get him this year for short money. You got him the next 2 years under control. If he sucked this year, you could have traded him halfway through the year or the end of the year and not do any worse than you did.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my second question, how does this affect Bogaerts? He can opt out after the 22 season. He sees this fire sale going on around him. I'm sure he'll want to opt out.
Okay, Billy, let me just stop you there because it's a good point.
Yep, good question.
And I'll answer it. The market's going to determine it for these guys. If he can make more elsewhere, or even the same, right? If he can do just as well somewhere else than here, he's a flight risk. Even though I think he likes it here where others didn't, obviously he recommitted here. But given the mass exodus from this team, the guys that did want out, from Mookie Betts to maybe Andrew Benintendi to Jackie Bradley probably, like black, white, it doesn't matter. It's like the players want out of here. And you know J.D. Martinez would be out of here too if he had a market, but he doesn't. So he's staying and he opted in. If Xander Bogaerts has a market, he's a real flight risk, I would say.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if you were him, wouldn't you ask for a trade right now? I would.
Hell yeah.
If I were him, I'd go to the organization and say, hey, look, with all due respect, get me the hell out of here. And maybe this is why Cora's back. Because he likes Cora. Cora likes him. They have a connection. And maybe this is all a way to keep Benintendi, or keep Bogaerts, keep him on the beam and keep him happy until they can try to straighten this thing out. Because otherwise, again, if I'm Bogaerts right now, I'm picking up the phone going, dude, give rid of me. I'm done. Man, you get Devers, get me out of here. I'm out.
Speaking of Cora, how do you think he feels after this offseason looking at the roster? Or is he just happy to have a job?
B.
Yeah.
I mean, again, B. I think he's happy to be back in the game. And my guess is that they told him some of this when they discussed it. And he just wanted to get back in and fine, I'm in. And so he's got his work cut out for him. If you're going to have all these pieces and platoon players and you get a match all the time, a lot's going to fall on the manager. And my guess is that inevitably he's going to F up and they're going to get rid of him. Now, again, I'm not saying that's in a year. Maybe it's two. I don't know. But you put that much pressure on the manager without talent in a big market. Again, it's not Tampa. How much heat does Kevin Cash take down there? It took him blowing the World Series before anybody said anything about him.
Okay, folks, we're going to continue with your thoughts on the Andrew Benintendi trade. We have thoughts on it, and they're not positive. Maz is all bent out of shape, thank God. So we continue with that. I'm going to give you a quick Bruins minute off of last night. Tuukka Rask did not know the score of the hockey game in a tie hockey game with a minute left, and he skated off the ice because he thought they needed an extra skater, when it turns out it was a tie game and they weren't losing. How do you feel about that? I'll tell you how I feel about it right after Big Jim Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You listen sometimes because you agree.
I agree with Matt.
And sometimes because deep down you like the pain.
Pulling each other's shirts off and licking each other's faces.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
65 seconds left here in regulation. 2-2 game. Here's Craig Smith. We got a delayed penalty apparently. Rask was heading off the ice.
They're yelling at him to get back in the net. Could hear the bench yelling to get back in the net.
Rask back in the net. Stops the puck with two. And as he slings it into the far corner, the horn sounds and we're going to head to overtime at Madison Square Garden. Rask having a laugh as he was heading off the ice.
Did he think they were down by a goal?
We'll find out after the game. It's two apiece, Bruins and Rangers.
The whole bench yelling to get back in the net.
Yeah, that was quite the thing. That was the call here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. 2-2 game. Minute left, Madison Square Garden. Rask skates off the ice. Starts skating to the bench for the extra skater, I guess, or no one knew at the time. What? Skates on. They wave him, frantically wave him back. they survive. There's a turnover right after. They almost give up a go-ahead goal with less than a minute left. They survive overtime, win in overtime. So what the hell was going on there? Rask was asked after the game. What was going on, Jimmy? You got it? Tuca, why'd you skate off the ice with a minute left in a tie hockey game?
I just had to tell something to Yara real quick.
Ah, ha, ha. Had to tell something to Yara real quick. No, go ahead. Seriously.
I just had to tell something to Yara real quick. I honestly thought we're down 2-1. That's it. I thought we're down 2-1. Yeah, and then, you know, I was waiting for Butchie to wave me over there. I'm like, what the heck is he not? There's like a minute and a half left. He's not waving me. And then I just like decided to come when we had to puck. And then I think Chucky told me, buddy, it's 2-2. So.
Yeah, a tie game. I'm just going to leave the whole net open for the final minute of the game. You know, I was minute and a half left. Where was Bruce? He wasn't paying attention. No, Tuca, it was a 2-2 game. It wasn't a 2-1 game. All right, so, like, I could lose my mind about this, but you know what? I'm not going to, and if I'm being honest, it really doesn't bother me. And you know why? He was so freaking money last night. It's not even funny. Did you watch?
He was great. He was there. That one save he made with his glove is not typically the kind of save he makes. I thought it was out of this world.
I'm glad to hear you say this because same thing. Like, he would have clearly given us 4 hours of content had the Rangers scored when he pulled himself like a dummy with 40 seconds left. But how mad can you be when he was ultimately one of, if not the main reasons they win that game last night? He made tremendous saves.
He was stellar. He was outstanding in that game. And it wasn't like, Maz, I'm glad you hit on it. It wasn't like one of those Tuukka Rask games where he saves 29 saves on 30 shots, and it doesn't look like he does anything, where he's just square to the puck and in position. It just hits him, and it's like you don't even remember him making any of the saves, but he saved, you know, 29 of the 30. This one, he was spraying out. He was cutting down the angle. That glove save on Zibanejad is who it was, I mean, what a save. And then a couple minutes later, Zibanejad has a clean break and Rask stops him on the other side with the blocker side. Zibanejad himself must have gone to bed, you know, with a Tuukka Rask in his head, because Rask was just outstanding in this game. So it's one of those things where the goalie kind of he's in his own world. The goalie is just in his own world. Rask isn't the only one. It's that position. Those guys tend to be that way. What's the score? I don't know. What's the diff? See puck, stop puck. Okay. And then that's it. I would say going forward, if you're not going to keep track of the score, then wait for the coach to actually wave you over then. Like, let's not make the call on your own. Let's wait for if you're paying attention to the score, then I guess you can do that. But if you're just deciding not, because, I mean, I guess, does it really matter if the goalie knows what the score is? I mean, you want him stopping the puck, right?
Correct.
So it's not whether it's 7-0 or 1-1. You got to stop the puck. That's your job. It really okay, fine. Then don't pay attention to the score. If that's what you need or if that's what it takes, don't pay attention to the score. Just wait for the instruction then on when to come off the ice. Don't make that call on your own. But either way, another fun hockey game. Once you got out of the first period, which was a real snooze fest, and I don't think the Bruins played great. They kind of pulled another one out of their ass in one respect, and then another respect, I think they got unlucky, where you know, it's a 1-1 game. Again, they're still not scoring on 5-on-5. They tie the game 1-1 shorthanded. They do get a 5-on-5 goal to go ahead 2-1, and then they had a goal that should have made, or maybe it was before the 2-1 goal. It was before the 2-1. It was 1-1. DeBrusk had a shot that hits up underneath the bar.
It was unbelievable.
Go ahead, Maz.
No. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. But it hits the underside of the bar, goes straight down. As it's on its way down, it sort of rotates onto its vertical plane, if that makes sense. It falls right side up. And I don't know if I'm describing that properly, but on its edge, if you will. And it hits on the goal side of the red line, but when you see it from over the top, the puck in the air is still kind of hanging over the goal line. But I think that somewhere in the air, Maz, because it was going down on its side, it had crossed that line fully, but there was no angle. I mean, have you ever seen anything like that?
No. In fact, I was just about to say that, watching it, and we were all riveted to it in our house. I said, I don't think I've ever seen anything even remotely close to that. Like, the fact that it could hit the crossbar and drop down and rotate while it's in the air, so that at one point it does look like it's over the line while in the air. But then when it hits, the front edge was tipped towards center ice, so it was back on the red line, even though it wasn't touching the ground.
Right.
Like, it was, I thought between that, and I know you're going to get to the other one, those two calls, I thought the Bruins, I said, oh, man, they got piped. Boy, get piped.
I don't think they played well. Defensively, they gave up a lot of chances, and Rask was there to save their ass. So I'm not sitting here saying, like, you know, they totally deserve the win, but that was bad luck. Okay, that was a matter of inches, and I still think that probably crossed the line. There was just no angle of it. And then the Rangers tie the game on a high stick that technically isn't a high stick because it hit the Bruins defenseman, and can you replay it? They weren't really great on the broadcast telling me whether that was even reviewable or not, or whether they did or not, because originally they said they didn't review it, and then they came back and said, well, the reason it wasn't overturned is because it hit the Bruins defenseman before it was tapped into the open net. I'm like, well, so which is it, Pierre? Like, quit reading me the effing, his stupid bio and where he went to. I don't care that he went to Colgate. Like, tell me about the rule and what happened here. Like, they didn't explain it. But either way, it was bad luck. I mean, that probably shouldn't be a goal. I don't know what the rule says exactly in that situation, whether it's reviewable or not, or off the Bruins defenseman. Like, I mean, I do know the rule. Once it hits the Bruins defenseman, it's, you know, the Rangers can play the puck, but it's like, that's not really the spirit of the rule there. So that was just bad luck either way. It was just a high stick and a bad bounce, and that ties the game. So you kind of got some bad luck, but it was entertaining to boot. I mean, it was just another one of these Bruins games where they just can't lose. They just can't lose. And there were, the defense was not as good as it's been, but there were a couple things that just stood out, and one was DeBrusque came back, and they put him with Coyle and Bjork, and that might have been their best line.
What, do you have 14 shot attempts last night?
Is that what it was? Yeah. That line had 14 shot attempts?
DeBrusque.
Himself at 14?
Yeah.
No.
Attempts.
Okay, not on that, but still, that's an extraordinarily high number. It feels like. Did guys get 14 shots off in a game?
No, Mike, that's real. Like, it's either 13 or 14. It was something ridiculous.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe they found something. I thought Coyle himself woke up a little bit. He didn't find the score sheet, but I noticed him finally. And I think he's been really quiet, invisible this year, Charlie Coyle has. So maybe they're onto something there with DeBrusque, Coyle, and Bjork. That was a goal that made it 2-1, so I like that. Oh, one more bad break I wrote down real quick. There was a play that I hate, and you see this more in hockey more and more, where Wagner got a clean check on someone in the corner, and the guy jumped him because he just didn't like being checked or something. And they drop the gloves and they fight. Well, it should have been an easy instigator on the Rangers defenseman there. Because he just, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I saw it. No, absolutely, I saw it. He absolutely got jumped. He got popped in the face because of it, too, for crying out loud.
It was a clean check.
Legit. It was a legit hit.
The guy didn't like getting checked, so he drops the gloves, fights, clearly instigating on the Rangers, and they evened up the penalties. It's like, again, not that I missed the homerism of Jack Edwards there, but I could, you know, Pierre, I could have used a little something there on that situation. Like,
Little Atkinson is so smart out of Riverside, Connecticut, Boston College, Avon Old Farms, and Mid-Fairfield Blues before he got to the NHL.
He's too busy telling me that Jeff Wagner went to Colgate. I don't care. Or wherever the F, Cornell. What did he say? I don't care. I don't care where he went to college. Why is the first thing always where the guy went to college? Who cares? Or where he played high school, or Bantam. I don't care where he played Bantam, Pierre. But like that situation, that called for a little analysis there. The refs totally, you know, bailed out the Rangers defenseman who jumped Wagner on a clean check. And oh, by the way, that happens too much in hockey, where it's a clean check, but oh, you got to fight because it's a clean check? How about hit him back versus, you know, I mean, I like the fighting, but either way. Anyway, the lead story is Rask with his head in it, the clouds, or up his ass. Either way. Stopping everything in sight. I mean, just a tremendous game. He was freaking stellar. But he's either so in the zone or so out to lunch. He waltzes off the ice with a minute left in a tie game. It's like, wow. It's just the wonderful tapestry that is Tuukka Rask, right?
I just have to tell somebody Yara real quick.
Yeah, you just gotta, and then he makes a joke about it. He later said, yeah, well, it's an entertainment business, so I hope you're all entertained. Well, yeah, it's an entertainment business, Rask, but we're not, like, you know, we don't mean to want to laugh at you. That's not the idea there. Entertaining is winning cups.
The only guy who looked loopier than him yesterday was Brady.
Seriously. Let's just glide off the ice with a minute left in a tie game.
I just have to tell somebody Yara real quick.
So anyway, there's your Bruins minute. Back to your phones on everything right after this.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Just a non-stop whirlpool of kerfuffle.
Kicking a hornet's nest every single day.
You gotta listen to believe it. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now you got a 2-on-1 the other way. Buchnevich over the line, right side into the right circle. And his pass knocked down by McAvoy. That will leave a breakaway for Marchand. He'll carry it into the left circle. Pull and drag, shoots. He scores! Marchand puts the sword away as the Bruins win it in overtime at Madison Square Garden. 3-2 over the Rangers.
That's how the Bruins won it. One more real quick note. That play by McAvoy.
Great play.
Oh, wow. It was a 2-on-1, as you heard right there, and he sort of batted it out of midair. Tremendous hand-eye. And gathers it and feeds Marchand for the game-winning goal. Charlie McAvoy, don't look now, but he is, it's early, but he's sniffing Norris consideration. This is, I thought, you know, we've been saying this for the last couple of years. He's got to round into that kind of guy for the Bruins to be what we want them to be, which is a perennial contender. You need that number one D, that Norris kind of guy. If not a Norris winner, a Norris kind of guy. Charlie McAvoy now has 11 points in 12 games. That's top five in NHL scoring among defensemen. He's a plus five on the year, and he averages 24 minutes a night. That's going to get you Norris votes. I don't think he wins it. I don't know if he's ready for that. I don't know if he's the best defenseman in the league. But you start doing that, you start, you know, tracking around a point a game, a half a point a game, you know, usually is like the standard. But if you're going to be, you know, rounding or closing in on a point a game as a plus defenseman averaging 24 minutes a night, you're getting votes if not winning the thing. So that's good news for the Bruins. He's been really good this year.
Tremendous. And so my question to you would be, would he be this good if Chara were here?
Yeah, Maz, maybe not. You know, maybe that's part of the whole thing. Maybe Lozon fits better with him, and maybe it's even just beyond that. You know, it's
he needed
your
room
team
to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Your team, you're going to get the minutes. You're going to be the guy that's out there with the game on the line. And even though he was there with Chara, you know, he had a lot of those spots in the past with Chara. Now it's just him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's a good point. But either way, like, that's a good development for the Bruins.
And quickly, I was ready to pile on Marchand, too, if they ended up losing this game, because I thought he was a mess with the puck through regulation. How many odd man rushes did he give up with bad passes? But what do you know? Scores the game winner in overtime, so don't have much to say.
Okay, there we go. Phones on everything so far, which was mostly Benintendi. Go ahead, Mo in the car. You're up next.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. You know, I never understand the Red Sox logic when it comes to their players. They undervalue a guy like Andrew Benintendi, but for years we keep hearing how important Jackie Bradley Jr. was to this team. And I think back to the couple years ago when John Carlos Stanton was in the trade market and JBJ was in talks for being part of the trade, and the Red Sox didn't want to pull the trigger. So my question is, like, what constitutes being a good player for the Red Sox? I just don't understand their logic.
Well, I mean, let's just say that the old regime, maybe that was fair. This regime, Chaim Boom doesn't want him either. I mean, Jackie Bradley's gone too. He's a free agent. They didn't have to trade him, but they're not giving $10, $15 million to come back here. So at least there's a consistency there. Heim Bloom doesn't want any of your old good young players, guys that we used to think were good young players. But I don't want Jackie Bradley either. See, to me, Maz, Jackie Bradley's different because I know his ceiling.
Correct.
I think Jackie Bradley is a fully realized baseball player.
He is what he is.
He's going to hit .230. Every once in a while, he'll step into one and hit a home run. He'll half dozen times a year make a great play in the outfield, and that's what he is. That's what he is. He's not going to be anything more than that. He's now 7-8 years in Major League Baseball, and that's it. He's a fully ceilinged, realized ball player. Andrew Benintendi's in his fourth year, and his first 2 years were really good, and he had one step back season, and then the pandemic hit, and I still don't know exactly what he is or what he's going to be. Big difference there.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, to me, you either got to ride that one out and accept him for what he is, or you trade him when you can get something back. And that to me, is again, I just feel like they're the number seven pick in the draft. He had a good year in 2018. And then all of a sudden now they can't dump him fast enough for nothing. And in the middle of that all, which again is really the big part of it, they ruined him. They ruined Andrew Benintendi. Bradley, my issue with Bradley, just quickly, really wasn't with Bradley. It's with the people who made Jackie Bradley out to be something he wasn't. And more importantly, who still think that he's going to hit 290 with 30 homers some year.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. Benintendi, we don't know what he is yet.
Exactly.
I mean, why wouldn't you wait that out?
Very different cases.
Dave in Wilmington. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, guys. 2 points. Number one, John Henry is checked out on the team. He's bored. He's got other things going on. He's not visible. Maybe he's keeping the payroll low to sell the team. Secondly, Benintendi is Troy O'Leary. He's a poor man's J.D. Drew. Low intensity, tends to dog it. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, well, I mean, maybe, but he also could be good because you don't know. He's 25 years old. So we know what J.D. Drew was by the time J.D. Drew got here. We knew what J.D. Drew also helped you win a World Series, as much as we hate him. So let's, like, not forget that. And Andrew Benintendi was a big part of your World Series championship, too. So, yeah, you could say that about those players. They helped you win it all. And he doesn't cost you anything, and you have two more years of team control on him. So why are you giving up on him?
See, but a guy like him let's not get bogged down in what Benintendi was or what he wasn't. And again, we don't know in the big picture. The fact is that he was an asset, and they didn't maximize it. And furthermore, he was an asset in 2018 that for whatever reason they decided to change into something else or wanted to change into something else, and they botched the asset. Which, again, leads to a discussion about a million things because, as usual in baseball now, it spirals into a lot of different directions. But the approach the Red Sox are taking this offseason should infuriate you. It should infuriate you. There is no excuse for them trying to sell you a rebuild and not being able to compete at the same time. They should be able to do both. They've always had the capacity to do both. Don't accept it just for the sake of accepting it.
Right back to your phones after Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials here, folks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.